Well, we often consider, brethren, how the nature of animals was cursed as a result of Adam and Eve's sin, and that this will be changed in the millennium. And of course, that's why we had these animals up on stage for the children. It's going to be a wonderful day. We read about that in Isaiah 11, the nature of animals is going to be changed. But that's actually true of dangerous plant life as well. And I would like to take a more in-depth look at a particular aspect of the curse that God imposed on mankind when mankind sinned. Because it wasn't just the animal realm that was affected by that. It was also the plant realm. We can see that over in Genesis 3, if you turn over to there, Genesis 3. Now, if you here have heard me speak on this subject before, it was suggested that I give this as a feast message, and so I have revised it somewhat for that purpose. And I thought, well, I better do it now because I'll end up writing this as an article, and then I can never use it as a sermon. Because everybody will see that, but I know that enough people haven't seen it that I think it's good to go through it. And I've revised it even for those who have, and hopefully they will get something more out of it. I often find, by the way, for myself, even if I've heard something again or even sometimes exactly the same thing, and I get a lot more out of it. So I hope that that you will permit me this if you have. There's only probably a few here who have, so that's good. But brethren, if you will look here in verses 17 through 18 of Genesis 3, we can read that, then to Adam God said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it. So it's going to be difficult in that sense. All the days of your life, both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. Because they had to go out and till the land and take care of it. And it would be hard to maintain it because there would always be these thorns and thistles. And thorns and thistles would be a problem. Now, I want us to key in on this because we may think of this only in terms of difficulty in gardening and agriculture. But there's more to it than that. We need to realize that thorns are sharp, that they can hurt us, that they can injure us. I'd like to put a slide up if... We're ready back there. I want to show you a picture. This is a common sight in Missouri, actually. And yikes. That is a honey locust tree. And there's lots of them out there. And if you're ever in the woods, you have to be very careful making your way around these things. This kind of thing, and you're looking at that as a tree, but you've also got these things on plants on the ground. And if you can imagine, in Eden, if you'd had this kind of thing, it would have been pretty bad for people walking around outside naked. You would not want to run into something like that. But, of course, Adam and Eve were not going to be doing that anymore after they were put out of the garden. But thorns and thistles have nonetheless been a serious nuisance to human beings for thousands of years that we've been on Earth, especially as life has been rural and agrarian for most people until recent times. But there is a bigger picture here. And brethren, today I'd like for us to consider what thorns represent in Scripture, how the solution to them has been provided, and what that means for us and the world's future. What thorns represent in Scripture, how the solution to them has been provided, and what that means for us in the world's future. And I've titled it, The Solution to Man's Thorny Problem. The Solution to Man's Thorny Problem, because it certainly is a problem. It may be surprising to learn that the issue of thorns is a running theme throughout the Scriptures, as we will see. First off, we should realize that thistles and thorns here in Genesis are representative of the greater impact that was to come on all of nature. You know, following the expulsion from Eden, as I mentioned, the nature of animals was changed to a predation system, with animals hunting and devouring others. I know, sometimes we'll be watching these nature shows. My wife doesn't like to watch these nature shows a lot of times because it's going to be bad. It's going to be something awful. There's a little baby animal there, and he's toast. And that's about right. I mean, it's just awfulness that's going on out there. We look forward to Isaiah 11 and what it means. But that whole system is designed to teach us something. Some people have the idea, by the way, that Satan sort of designed a lot of these things, and I certainly think it's the way of Satan that you see portrayed in nature. But, I mean, if you look at verses like in Job, it actually says, who hunts the prey for the lions? And God is talking about himself when he says that. God is the one who actually set up this predator-prey system in nature. But why did God do that? I mean, it wasn't because that was an ideal system. God was trying to teach us something. He wrote things into the fabric of creation. He cursed the creation. You know, here's an interesting point about that. You've got this intelligent design argument out here where we can look at the creation and it is very clear that God is the creator. He's made all of this. It's unbelievable what is out there. There's no excuse for being an atheist, as the Bible says, because it is so obvious that all of this was created by a brilliant master creator. But then you'll find people pointing out things that seem very problematic. And they say, well, this doesn't look like a design. This looks like an awfulness. What happened here? You know, why is this like this? This wouldn't be from a benevolent, good creator who's made all of this. And, of course, the answer is, brethren, that the creation is cursed. We do not live in a perfect realm yet. We live in a cursed creation because of sin. And God has, in some places, made things not work so well. And, in fact, this whole world is in decay and heading toward oblivion. This entire universe is headed toward oblivion unless God would do something about it. Because this is physical and temporary, as we heard about. It's all fleeting. It is not permanence. And it is, you see sometimes these aspects of horror, like that. Who wants to run into that? But God put it there because it teaches us things. It's for a lesson to us today. I would like us to look at another slide. I want to point something out. This is from a Creation Magazine, Answers Magazine, the July-September 09 issue had an article. And it was talking about design in the curse, and that's true. When God made this curse, yes, but it all works together. The ecosystem is still all perfectly balanced. These things work together. But I'd like us to notice that image right there. That is a tree hopper, which is kind of a cicada-like creature. And you'll notice that the exoskeleton on it is raised up in the back to look like a thorn. So it will blend in with the thorns to escape death. I think there's a lot of lessons in that very fact right there. We see what kind of a world we live in and what the necessities are. But, you know, that was not the way the original creation was, that you wouldn't have had thorns like this, that you would have had, you know, much more benign plants, and you wouldn't need to have some kind of design like that. So I think that's just a very interesting lesson that even just that very one image can teach us. But that's it for the slides for right now. We'll have a few more later. Well, the natural realm, brethren, today displays a way of pain, of suffering, of loss. And it's all meant to be a lesson to us. In fact, that's the larger metaphor here with thorns and thistles. All of life's difficulties, particularly pain and suffering, are pictured by thorns. What is the penalty of sin? What is the penalty of sin? I bet, you know, we could have a show of hands and we'd all get the same answer, probably Romans 6:23. The wages of sin is death. And that is true. The wages of sin is death. But, brethren, that is not the only penalty. That is the ultimate penalty. Penalty is far more encompassing. Sin brings more than just death. Sin brings misery and pain and suffering. Sin brings all the bad things of our world. And then ultimately death. And so we've got to keep that in perspective because it's very important that we realize that sin is not just this, you know, sin, die. No, it's sin, horrible life, and then die. That's what sin is and what it does. Okay, we've got a lot of verses to get to, so I want to move through these. And again, I'm going to make sure I keep an eye on my time here so that I don't get bogged down in any one spot. I'd like you to turn over to Judges 8, if you would. Judges 8. And I'm going to point out a couple things. And this is under the first point I have here. My first point is thorns as curse or punishment. Thorns as curse or punishment. Of course, maybe the first verse under that would be what we just read in Genesis 3, Genesis 3, 17 through 18, that you have the curse. And it's represented by these thorns that are being brought forth from the ground. But I want to show you in Judges 8, that you have actually thorns being used brutally on other people. This is where Gideon had told some people to come help him deal with some problem guys, and they wouldn't help him. You know, he was supposed to be the judge of the land, and they would not help him. And in Judges 8, verse 7, it says, so Gideon said to these men of Succoth, which is interesting too because they lived in these temporary dwellings, and Succoth is what that means, what tabernacles means, but where they live. But for this cause, Gideon said, when the Lord has delivered Zeba and Zalmunna, these guys he was looking for, into my hand, then I will tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. Thorns and briars. We see that a lot in the Bible. But if you look down to verse 16, he carried through on that. He said, and we came back, says he took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth. he whipped them with thorns and briars and cut their flesh. It's a weapon, basically, that he was using here. Now, you know, it's pretty brutal. More than just switches, by the way. You know, I know a lot of times people today get scared when they think of the idea of a switch. I know that I had that when I was a kid. It was not very pleasant. But at least I think it had been cleared of any thorns. I can't imagine that. It'd be pretty awful. But that's what you have, that you can actually use thorns as a weapon. I'd like you to turn over to Proverbs next. Proverbs, and we'll see a few verses here that demonstrate again maybe more the figurative sense of this. Proverbs 15, we'll look at verse 19. It says, the way of the lazy man is like a hedge of thorns, but the way of the upright is a highway. You know, in one sense, we think when we're upright, we are traveling the narrow and difficult path, which is true because it's against the way of the world. But as we travel that path, it becomes a highway. It becomes a way that leads to good things. And it becomes a way that helps us to avoid many of the problems in life, as opposed to the lazy man whose way is like a hedge of thorns. And let me just throw in, I didn't have this written down here, but laziness, brethren, is a killer. Laziness is an absolute killer. It is a killer spiritually, because when we're lazy, we don't do the things that we need to do to stay in the family of God. You know, we don't pray enough. We don't study the Bible enough. And we don't have the power then to overcome. So we need to make sure that we are fighting against laziness, because we'll meet thorns. We will meet thorns. The way of the lazy man is a hedge of thorns. Then that's in Proverbs 15:19. And then if we skip a few over to Proverbs 22, Proverbs 22, verse 5, we are told that thorns and snares are traps. And thorns are traps in a sense, too. If you think about getting into a thorn bush, you get stuck there. Thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. If you veer off the course, he who guards his soul will be far from them. And that gives us some of the clue of avoiding thorns, by the way, taking care and precaution and not going that way. Thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. If you go that way, you're going to meet with these thorns. And again, that's not really talking about literal thorns. That's talking about the difficulties and problems that we experience in this life and as part of the curse. Proverbs 24, look over there. Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 31. We see this again about laziness. I went by the field of the lazy man. I went by the field of the lazy man, Proverbs 24, 30 through 31, and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding, because there's a serious lack of understanding in being lazy and not taking care of these things. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. You know, we might think of that only as a lesson. If you don't, you know, keep up with things, they'll deteriorate and break down. But there's much more here, because we see this imagery of thorns again and again in the Bible, and how you run into these thorns, you run into these problems when you do not do what you should do spiritually. Let's go over to the book of Isaiah. We'll see a few scriptures over here. Isaiah. Here we're told in Isaiah 5, look at Isaiah 5. Isaiah 5 is where he's comparing Israel to a vineyard that he's tending. But in verse 6, because, you know, the people are not acting right, they're not responding well, they were turning to wrong ways. Isaiah 5, verse 6, God says, I will lay it waste. That's what he's telling Israel. And that's what he's telling the nations of Israel today, even, brethren. That's what's coming. I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned or dug, but there shall come up briars and thorns. That's the penalty. That is what's going to happen as a result of going away from God, is that the land, on it will come up briars and thorns. I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain on it. So they don't get rain. You know, just like when people don't keep the Feast of Tabernacles in the millennium, they don't get rain. You're not going to be rewarded and blessed. You're going to be cursed with thorns if you don't go the way God says. And that's what he tells Israel here. And then if we look down to the next two chapters later, Isaiah 7, we'll read three verses here. Isaiah 7, reading verses 23 through 25. Isaiah 7, 23 through 25. It will happen in that day that wherever there could be 1,000 vines worth 1,000 shekels of silver, so it could be all this great blessing, it will be for briars and thorns. The devastation will leave nothing but briars and thorns. With arrows and bows, men will come there, because all the land will become briars and thorns. All of the land is going to be overtaken by this. And verse 25, and to any hill which could be dug with the hoe, you will not go there. It could be tilled, but it's not, for fear of briars and thorns. But it will become a range for oxen and a place for sheep to roam. It is not a very conducive environment to habitation. It is just, you know, there's a few things of grass here growing here and there for some animals. Isaiah 32, if you flip over there, Isaiah 32. We see this again and again, brethren. And that's what was so shocking to me the first time I looked through this, to find out how often God talks about this in the Bible. Isaiah 32, verse 13. On the land of my people will come up thorns and briars. Yes, on all the happy homes in the joyous city. But then it won't be so happy, because of the briars and thorns. And Isaiah 34, two chapters later, Isaiah 34, verse 13. And thorns shall come up in his palaces, nettles and brambles in the fortresses. It shall be a habitation of jackals, a courtyard for ostriches. And one thing I want us to notice here again is there is an issue of, without tending these things and keeping these things back, they overtake everything. When they're not tended to, when they're not taken care of, when they're not dealt with, they completely take over. And we should think that about that as our lives too, brethren, not just the physical land on which we dwell. You know, when we don't take care of things that need to be taken care of, thorns, nettles and brambles come up and take over everything, and it's hard to escape it. Hosea, the book of Hosea, let's flip over there, here in the Minor Prophets, a few well, probably quite a few pages, but just a few books over. Hosea chapter 2. Hosea chapter 2, we can read here in verse 6 that God says, therefore, behold, I will hedge up your way with thorns and wall her in so that she cannot find her paths. And again, that's what happens. It becomes more difficult as these things encroach on us. Hosea 9. We'll look at a couple more scriptures in Hosea. Hosea 9. For indeed they are, Hosea 9, verse 6, for indeed they are gone because of destruction. Egypt will gather them up. Memphis will bury them. That is these Israelites. Nettles shall possess their valuables of silver. Thorns shall be in their tents. Ouch, again. That is very painful, but it also talks about how it's just all overtaken. And Hosea 10, verse 8, also the high places of Avon. And that is talking about Bethel, which was in the land of Ephraim. Well, this is where one of the calves of Israel was set up in the land. The high place of Avon, which I think is also symbolic of Israel today, the sin of Israel, shall be destroyed. The thorn and thistle shall grow on their altars. They shall say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. And of course, we heard about that in an end time context, when people are begging for this hiding from the face of God as judgment comes on the nations. Thorns and thistles, it says, will grow on the altars, because, again, it's all overtaken by these symbols of the curse. Number two is that problem people are called thorns as part of the curse. Problem people are called thorns as part of the curse. I want us to notice this. You know, it was mentioned that animals will be dwelling at peace together. It says that in Isaiah 11. But the animals there are also representative of people, of the nations. It's a literal thing. The animals will be at peace. That's true. But it also is meant to convey a lesson about the way that humanity will interact then. And the reason we know that is because the very last part of that says, "And they will not destroy or hurt in all my holy mountain, because the knowledge of the Lord will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea." And that doesn't have to do with the animals understanding the knowledge of the Lord. That's to do with people understanding the knowledge of the Lord and being at peace as a result of that. And then, of course, God also blessing the created realm around us because of the peace that is among human beings. But we see that among that these animals are figurative as well as literal. And that's true about the plants. Again, the plants are literal, that they are causing these problems, but they also are figurative of people. And we sang earlier, you know, at the beginning today of our services, we sang about how the righteous, he will be a tree that grows, planted by the river's side, which in season yields its fruit, green its leaves abide. Who will be that? The righteous of God will be these strong and vibrant plants that are well watered. And the bad plants are bad people. We see that a number of times. Numbers 33, if you'll turn over there. The book of Numbers, chapter 33. God is talking to the Israelites about driving the people out from before them. Numbers 33, verse 55. He warns them very, very explicitly. And I want us to notice the very specific wording of part of this. Numbers 33:55, God says, "But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall be that those whom you let remain shall be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides." I want us to remember that. There will be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they will harass you in the land where you dwell. So it's going to be a punishment. And I want us to flip down to Joshua 23. We'll see this again and a little bit differently worded. I want us to notice the wording again. Joshua 23, verse 13. Joshua 23, verse 13. Here, again, we have this warning. Joshua 23, verse 13. "Know for certain." Know it for certain. And I think we should know it for certain too, brethren. "That the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations from before you." You know, as a punishment, going the wrong way. "But they shall be snares and traps to you." Again, you fall into something that you can't get out of. "They will be snares and traps to you and scourges." And the Hebrew there is shotet, which also has the meaning of piercings of thorns, as well as scourges, because scourges were also formed from bits of thorns and other particles. And scourges are shotet. They will be scourges on your sides and thorns in your eyes. I want us to remember that again. Thorns in the eyes, scourges in the sides, until you perish from this good land which the Lord your God has given you, until you meet the ultimate penalty of sin, death. You get the pain and the suffering, and it ends in death, till you perish. We can see also, I'll just refer to you, Judges 2:3. God says, "Therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall be thorns in your side. And their gods shall be a snare to you." The false idols of the world become a snare. And it draws them in to this pain and suffering of the thorns. I'd like you to turn to Ezekiel 2, the book of Ezekiel. I know we're jumping around the Bible here, but again, it's all through the Bible, and that's what's so interesting about this. We'll find it in the New Testament as well. It's not just even just in the Old Testament. Ezekiel chapter 2, it says here in verse 6 of Ezekiel 2, Ezekiel 2, 6, "And you, son of man, do not be afraid of them, nor afraid of their words." Now, this is, you know, Ezekiel's being told he's going to go here among these people, and there's problem people he's going to face. He says, "Though briars and thorns are with you, and you dwell among scorpions." And the scorpions, of course, are representative of these bad people, this rebellious nation. "They are briars and thorns and scorpions. Do not be afraid of their words or dismayed by their looks, though they are a rebellious house." And being a rebellious house, they are thorns and briars and scorpions. They are these bad things that God is warning of. Turn over to the book of Micah. The book of Micah, chapter 7. And my son's name is Micah, and he's getting pretty excited right now, I think. The book of Micah, chapter 7, verse 4. And this is talking about the people of Israel. What an indictment this is here. Micah 7, 4. It says, the best of them is like a briar. The best of them is like a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of your watchmen and your punishment comes. Now shall be their perplexity. Because it's just all rotten, brethren, from the head to the toe. The very best are thorns and briars. It's sad. What an indictment, and it's still true today. Turn over to Matthew 7, here in the New Testament. Matthew 7, we see something that Jesus said. Matthew 7, verse 16, this is a lesson that we often turn to, but we think about it in this context of thorns. It says, you will know them by their fruits. That's how you are to discern whether people are of God or not. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Thistles and thorns do not produce what God is looking for. And I find that very interesting. Again, he's talking about the character of people. And I'll just refer to you Luke 6:44, which is talking about the same thing. He says, for every tree is known by its own fruit. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. Thorns and brambles. Again, Christ is here using that very same terminology about bad people and the fruit, the bad fruit that they produce. And I'll just also refer to you Nahum 1, verse 2. Nahum 1, verse 2 says, for while tangled like thorns, and while drunken like drunkards, they will be devoured like stubble fully dried. So these people, he says, are tangled like thorns in their drunkenness. And notice he also says there, they will be devoured like stubble fully dried. That's a very important point. What is going to happen to these thorns? They are going to be devoured like stubble, burned away. That's what they're going to be. I'd like us, for point three then, to note that this is, that brings us to this. Thorns and briars are to be destroyed. Point number three, thorns and briars are to be destroyed. And I'd like you to turn over to Isaiah 9, but I'll just note for you another verse while you're turning over to Isaiah 9, is Jeremiah 12:13. In Jeremiah 12:13, it says, they have sown wheat but reaped thorns. You know, they're trying to grow something good that they need, but they reap thorns. They have put themselves to pain but do not profit. They've taken all this effort to try to raise a good crop, but to pain. Be ashamed of your harvest because of the fierce anger of the Lord. Be ashamed of your harvest, God says to Israel and his people, because they weren't doing right. And so they weren't bringing up what they should have been bringing up. And why? What is happening here? You know, this is all a penalty. And the great penalty we see here in Isaiah 9, you read it in verses 18 through 19. Isaiah 9, 18 through 19, for wickedness burns as the fire. It shall devour the briars and thorns and kindle in the thickets of the forest. Again, these thickets, these thick bushes together that you can't get out of. There's snares. You get stuck. You get scraped up by briars and thorns. But what's going to happen to all of that? It says, they shall mount up like rising smoke. It's all going to burn. Through the wrath of the Lord of hosts, the land is burned up, and the people shall be as fuel for the fire. No man will spare his brother. You know, what is this imagery here? You might have heard of crackling thorns. Kindling, that's what thorns are. Thorn branches, dried thorn branches, are kindling. And these people were to be as fuel for the fire. These thorns were all to be burned away. All of the problems of the land were to be burned away. Look at Isaiah 10, the next chapter, Isaiah 10, verses 16 through 18. Therefore, the Lord of hosts, will send leanness among his fat ones, and under his glory he will kindle a burning like the burning of a fire. So the light of Israel, and we think that's a good image in one sense, this awesome light of God, but you think about those who are consumed by the brightness of his coming in the New Testament. Here it says, so the light of Israel will be for a fire, and his Holy One for a flame. It will burn and devour his thorns and his briars in one day. God is going to burn it away. He's going to burn away the thorns and briars. And it will consume the glory of his forest and of his fruitful field, both soul and body. And they will be as when a sick man wastes away. Because the whole land is overtaken by nettles and thorns and briars. And it's grown up in amongst the forests and the trees. And it's all going to burn, God says, to purge it. And flip back to 27, chapter 27, Isaiah 27. You know, we saw earlier that thorns and briars can be used as a weapon. And certainly if we're picturing the bad people as these thorns and briars, and their actions are thorns and briars, we see this as a figurative weapon here. Isaiah 27, verse 4, God says, "Fury is not in me. Who would set briars and thorns against me in battle?" Are you going to be able to take a weapon like this against God? God says, I would go through them. I would burn them all together. And that's what God will do when he is presented with these thorns that come against him. He's going to burn them away. They're going to be gone. That is going to be the penalty and the damage that comes. Chapter 33, Isaiah 33, verse 12. And the people shall be like burnings of lime. It's going to be really hot fire here. Like thorns cut up, they shall be burned in the fire. Like thorns cut up. Because, again, they are highly flammable. They are ready to be burned. And that's what God is going to do to them. I'll just refer you to Psalm 118, verse 2. This is one of the praise Hallel Psalms that was sung at the festival. Psalm 118, verse 12 is a lament about these enemies, saying, they surrounded me like bees. And of course, bees are also something that hurt and sting, and they're painful. And it's symbolizing these people as bees that are bad people that do bad things. And they were quenched, it says, like a fire of thorns. The surrounding bees, these people, are quenched like thorns. For in the name of the Lord, I will destroy them. They are going to be wiped out. I'd like you to turn to the New Testament, Hebrews 6, if you would. Should have had you turn there already. Hebrews 6. And again, I just find this very remarkable that we see this so many times through the Scriptures, and that there is so much meaning in it beyond a literal understanding of this. We need to take into it the understanding of the curse that has come as a result of sin. Hebrews 6, verses 7 through 8 is following a warning. You know, it's telling us not to fall away from the truth. And it says in verses 7 through 8, "For the earth which drinks in the rain that often comes upon it and bears herbs useful for those for whom it is cultivated, receives blessings from God." See, the blessings are these useful herbs. Verse 8, "But if it bears thorns and briars, it is rejected and near to being cursed, whose end is to be burned." I mean, it's right there, brethren. This is the curse of thorns and briars, and the end is to be burned, because they are kindling. Fuel for the fire, kindling to be burned. That is the end of the curse and how it's going to come. Verse 4, or point number 4 here, is that there will be no more thorns and briars in God's millennial kingdom. There'll be no more thorns and briars in God's millennial kingdom. Turn back to the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 55. In Isaiah 55, we see this wonderful picture here. In Isaiah 55, verse 13, we are told, "Instead of the thorn," notice that, "instead of the thorn," that is a great picture, "instead of the thorn shall come up the cypress tree." Now these are, you know, we need a lot of nourishment and moisture for these. This is a blessed land. "Instead of the thorn shall come up the cypress tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree." And that's beautiful, too. In fact, it talks about in Leviticus 23, which was read about the people taking the branches. One of the, you know, it says they will take beautiful branches, and of course it mentions the palm and the willow, but it also mentions the beautiful leafy branches. That's you know, the Jews use the myrtle for that today, and here it is, one of the tabernacle's trees is going to replace the briars. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. This is not going to be a, you know, an end in that sense. This new way is going to go on and on. And it is not, it is a removal of this curse of thorns and briars. Ezekiel 28, if you flip over there, Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel 28. And this is verse 24, Ezekiel 28, verse 24. I mean, it's an awesome picture of the future of this wonderful land. We think of the animals being at peace and not hurting one another, and we also think about the removal of these thorns. In Ezekiel 28, verse 24, and there shall no longer be a pricking briar or a painful thorn. And that's what they are, brethren, pricking briars and painful thorns for the house of Israel. And notice, from among all who are around them, who despise them, because the thorns and briars also, remember, represented these people that they were amongst. And it's not going to be that way. They shall know, then they shall know that I am the Lord God, as we heard earlier. They will know that I am the Lord God. When this happens, when the curse is taken away, this curse of thorns and briars, Isaiah 4, I'd like you to turn over there quickly, Isaiah 4. This is kind of an awesome scripture. I always like to look at it at the Feast of Tabernacles. Isaiah 4, it tells us something remarkable because it brings together all this imagery of the branches, of the fruit that you're supposed to, you know, to celebrate with at Tabernacles, and what's going to happen. And it says in Isaiah 4, verse 2, in that day the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious. And, of course, that's ultimately Jesus Christ is the branch. But we are to be branches of righteousness as well, brethren. And we are to be trees of provision. And the fruit of the earth will be excellent and appealing for those of Israel who have escaped. And it will come to pass that he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, everyone who is recorded among the living in Jerusalem. When the Lord has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and purged the blood of Jerusalem from her midst, how? By the spirit of judgment and the spirit of burning. It is all the bad things are going to be burned away. Then the Lord will create above every dwelling place of Mount Zion, above her assemblies, a cloud and smoke by day and the shining of a flaming fire by night. The pillar of cloud and fire is coming back. For over all the glory there will be a covering, and there will be a tabernacle, a sukkah, a booth. Above it all will be that cloud of God's protection for shade in the daytime from the heat, for a place of refuge and for a shelter from storm and rain. It is an awesome picture of the millennium. It is an awesome picture of God's protection. It is an awesome picture of following this spirit of burning and judgment, which will burn away the bad things and leave the permanence. It is a beautiful picture, but even that realm, as we were told earlier, is not completely permanent. You still have it represented as a tabernacle, as a temporary tabernacle, waiting for that ultimate permanence of the new heavens and the new earth. I want to also turn, if we would, over to Jeremiah. Actually, why don't you go ahead and turn to Matthew 13, and I'll just read to you Jeremiah 4, because I don't want to run into a time issue. But number 5, I want to ask this question. My previous point was 4, no more thorns and briars in God's millennial kingdom. And number 5, I want to ask how. How is that so? It's because thorns are removed as people reject the wrong way that brings the curse. And by the way, this is just one way. I'm going to give you another one too. But how are the thorns and briars removed? How are they not going to be in the kingdom? Because thorns are removed as people reject the wrong way that brings the curse. And we can, you know, if we read in Jeremiah 4:3, and I won't have you turn there, but it says, for thus says the Lord to the men of Judah and Jerusalem, break up your fallow ground. Do not sow among thorns. When you sow out, you know, your seed among the thorns, what are you going to reap? You reap what you sow, and you're going to create problems there. Well, they say, well, I'm not really sowing thorns. I'm sowing among thorns. But that's a bad place to sow. We read about that in the New Testament, Matthew 13. In Matthew 13, Jesus talked about this in the parable of the sower. I mean, it's just naturally going to be, though, that seed is sown among thorns as it's sown among the general public. And it says in Matthew 13, verse 7, and some of the seed fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. That's what thorns do. They choke out life. They choke out growth. They choke out things coming to fruition. And I'll just read for you a parallel passage here of Mark 4, 7. Jesus said in Mark 4, 7, and some seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. You don't get a crop when you sow among thorns. And again, I'll just read Luke 8, 14, because it's the same thing again. Now, the ones that fell among thorns are those who, when they've heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of life, and bring no fruit to maturity. The cares, the riches, the pleasures of this life, they are a snare. They are all thorns. And they choke out life. And there is no fruit then brought to maturity. And it is, again, this powerful picture that goes with these other scriptures we've seen. Point number six. Here's another way that there will be no more thorns and briars in God's kingdom. Number six, the thorns are removed because of one who bore the curse in our place. The thorns are removed because of one who bore the curse in our place. Turn to Genesis 22. I want us to see something remarkable here. Genesis 22. In Genesis 22, this is where Abraham, remember, was going to sacrifice Isaac. And he said, the Lord will provide a lamb. Because, you know, where's the lamb? The Lord will provide. What an amazing story this is. But he had confidence here in God. He didn't know how God would work it out. But God did work it out. And he stopped him from sacrificing Isaac. And here's what we read in verse 13. And then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked. And there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. I want us to think about the imagery of that. This is a ram that is representing the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And it is caught in a thicket by its horns. The horns are you know, where the power and strength comes from. But it is held down. It is held down and kept in place. It is trapped. It is stuck in a thicket. In a thicket, which is exactly what we've been reading about, where you get scraped up and bruised and hurt. And it is held there. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And that is the sacrifice of Christ that was in place of us. And I want to point out something else about this in a second. You know, this entangling snare that the ram was caught in. I'll just read a few verses here because you know the picture. I wouldn't need to even give you verses for this. You know them, but I will give you the verses. Matthew 27, 29, I'll just refer to. When they had twisted a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. And John 19, 2, the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And they put on him a purple robe. And verse 5 of John 19, and Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, Behold the man. And here he was with this crown of thorns that was intended as a mocking, brethren. But I want us to think about that crown of thorns with the same picture we just saw of a ram caught in a thicket by its horns, with this bush, this thorns jammed onto the head. And it's stunning when you think about that picture. And then also I want us to remember the particular curse of the thorns in the Garden of Eden. That was the symbol of the curse, the very symbol of the curse on man. The thorns, he wore it on his head and he was cut with it too. Because brethren, let's remember this, the particular penalty that was mentioned to Israel about the thorns and briars, and it was talked about the people that they, because they didn't purge the land, that the enemies there would be thorns in their eyes and shotet, scourges, pieces of thorn in their sides. And this is what Christ endured. He had thorns jammed around his head and probably poking his eyes. And he had these bits of thorns in the scourges, along with, you know, glass and other horrible things that carved these lines in his body and pierced his, you know, actually his side was cut up and pierced, and he bore that for us. Turn over to Galatians 3. Galatians 3. In Galatians 3, Paul says in verse 13, Galatians 3:13, Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law. And of course, some people think the curse of the law is to have to obey the law. That's not the curse of the law. The curse of the law is the penalty for not keeping the law. It is the pain and suffering and ultimately death. He has redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree. And he hung on a tree as the curse. From the head to the toe, it was his whole body bore the curse. You know, his feet were nailed in, and here on the very top of his head, the crown of his head, was jammed the thorns, this very symbol of the curse on man. It is absolutely mind-boggling. And we are meant to be amazed at this and to stand in awe of what Christ did for us. Number 7, I want to mention just quickly here, because I'm not going to have enough time if I don't. But number 7, I want to say other symbolism involving thorns showing God's plan of deliverance. Other symbolism involving thorns showing God's plan of deliverance. And this is kind of stunning. I'm going to read this to you from the New American Standard Bible. So you don't necessarily have to turn there because it'll be slightly different. But this is in Acts 7, verse 30, and I'll read verse 30 and verse 35. Acts 7, verses 30 and verse 35. And by the way, what this is talking about is, this is in Stephen's sermon where he's talking about Israel's history. He's talking about Moses' encounter with God at the burning bush. And I'll read something about the burning bush. It says, after 40 years had passed, in Acts 7:30, an angel appeared, and that's talking about Christ, because Christ was the Lord of that time. You know, that appeared to the people. An angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai in the flame of a burning thorn bush. It doesn't just say a burning bush. It says a burning thorn bush is actually the literal Greek here. The literal Greek is batos, which, if you look that up, means a briar bush, a bramble, a prickly bush, or a thorn bush. This was a thorn bush. And it's verse 35. This Moses, whom they disowned, saying, who made you a ruler and a judge, is the one whom God sent to be both a ruler and a deliverer with the help of the angel who appeared to him in the thorn bush. The thorn bush is the symbol of the curse. And he came down, this you know, fire of God, into this bush. The deliverer heard the cry of his people from their suffering. And in this imagery, he comes down into the suffering, into the curse of thorns. And ultimately, brethren, he would do that very thing. He would come down into the midst of this snare and curse of thorns and take on the penalty on himself. It is, again, a stunning picture. This one who appeared in the garden and pronounced the curse of thorns now reappears in the midst of thorns, promising deliverance from suffering to a land flowing with milk and honey. And that is what he promises us, brethren, as he takes on himself all of that. Number 8, I want to mention the shittim or acacia wood for the tabernacle and furnishings. And I have a number of verses here. I won't write them down. I'll just tell you where you can find them. In Exodus 25 and 26, 27 and 30. If you look at those chapters, Exodus 25, 26, 27 and 30. You've got the implements of the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant, and the poles for the Ark, and many of the other implements were made from what is called shittim wood in Hebrew, shittim, S-H-I-T-T-I-M. And in the Greek, it's acacia, A-C-A-C-I-A. You'll see that in some translations. Now, and then they would take that wood and it would be overlaid with gold And then, you know, after they worked it, then they would overlay it with gold, and it would be these implements of the tabernacle. But this is very symbolic too, brethren, because I want us to notice something. If you put a few more slides up here, I'll have for you. The first one, image number 3. I'm going to show you an acacia tree in Africa. Now, this is, you may be like ones that they saw, but you've probably seen a picture like that. That's, you know, showing out on the African savannah, these acacia trees. But there are many varieties of acacia trees, but they all have something very in common, which is why they're called acacia trees. And I'll show you that in a second. If you look at image 4, here's an acacia in the Elah Valley where David fought Goliath. So they have them in Israel too. And, of course, they had them there in the wilderness where they took the wood from these trees to make these various implements. And I'll just read for you Exodus 30, verse 5. You will make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Again, acacia, it means thorny. That's what the word means. That's what the word shittim means. Because shittim comes from shotet, which is a scourge or a piercing of thorns. So we're really talking about thorny wood. And if you look at image number 5, you can see acacias here that were on the Mount of Olives. That's my friend there, Dr. Brian Hazelton. You can't see it right in this picture, but he's pointing at these acacia thorns is what he's pointing at. That's the Temple Mount there in the background. And if we'll go to the next slide, you can see a closer up image of it. That's what they look like, brethren. And brethren, that is probably what was twisted up to make the crown of thorns right there. This same acacia thorns. Acacia means thorny wood. Shittim means thorny wood. That's what it means. So it's truly remarkable in that sense. And then we can be done with the slides now. So there we go. I mean, this is an amazing picture if we think about it, that you had to take that wood. Some of it was probably the thicker parts, but you'd still have to cut off the thorny branches. You'd have to work that wood. It was probably hard to get all of this wood without getting cut yourself. And then you had to smooth it out, you know, shape it how it needed to be, and then overlay it with gold. And, of course, gold is a symbol of God's character. So we're talking about getting rid of these thorns and replacing it with gold. It is a stunning picture that we're given here in these implements. And I want to give you another amazing picture, too, that God gives us. And this is, I'll quickly go through this. This is point number 9. Is Acacia Grove or Abel Shittim. Acacia Grove or Abel Shittim, which means field of thorns, in symbolic history and prophecy. Now, I'm just going to read these verses to you so I can not go over here, but I want to give this to you very quickly. Numbers 25, verse 1 says, "Now Israel remained in Acacia Grove," again, that Shittim or thorns, "and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab." That was the last stop before crossing the Jordan into the Promised Land. Was the field of thorns is where they stopped. And they did this immorality there at the very place right before they crossed over the Jordan. Numbers 33:49, they camped by the Jordan from Beth Yesimoth as far as the Abel Acacia Grove, the field of thorns in the plains of Moab. Joshua 2:1 says, "Joshua the son of Nun sent the two men out from Acacia Grove to secretly spy out the land from thorns." He sent them from the thorns. That's where they were camped, was at the thorns. Joshua 3:1, Joshua rose early in the morning and they set out from Acacia Grove, and that's the Shittim or the thorns, came to the Jordan, and he and all the children of Israel, and they lodged there before they crossed over. They camped at the thorns. They crossed over the Jordan, and then they camped at Gilgal, which means something as well. It means rolled away. Which is very similar to the word for Golgotha. It talks about rolling away the reproach. So you're at thorns, you cross the Jordan into the Promised Land, you have at Gilgal the reproach of sin rolled away. It's a pretty amazing picture, and I believe God did intend it to be very symbolic. Because he says in Micah 6:5, he tells them, look over at Micah 6:5 very quickly. In Micah 6:5 he says, "My people remember what Balak, king of Moab, counseled and what Balaam, son of Beor, answered." He's talking about when they broke down and committed this immorality at the field of thorns. "Remember your journey from Shittim to Gilgal." Notice that. Remember your journey from the thorns to the reproach being rolled away when you crossed over the Jordan into the promised land. Remember your journey, brethren, I would say as well, from thorns to Gilgal, to having that reproach rolled away, so that you may know the righteous acts of the Lord. This is an encouragement to remember that. But we can also look forward, brethren, and I want us to notice Joel 3:18. Joel 3:18, if you quickly look at Joel 3:18. This is a prophecy of the future, of the millennium, Joel 3:18. And it is amazing what it says, because it seems impossible. I want to read what it says. Joel 3:18, and it will come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drip with new wine, the hills shall flow with milk, and all the brooks of Judah will be flooded with water. Now, it's not talking about, you know, a flood that you can't walk in. This is a blessing we're talking about here. A fountain shall flow from the house of the Lord and water the valley of the acacias, the valley of Shittim. We're talking about the same place, Abel Shittim, which was on the other side of the Jordan from the temple. How can this be? If you think about that geographically, it doesn't work. You would have Jerusalem here. You'd have the water flowing out. How could it cross? How could that water cross the Jordan River and water the other side of the Jordan where the thorns are? It doesn't work geographically, because, brethren, it is not meant geographically. It is symbolic. It means something symbolic. And even this is in Clark's commentary. Clark's commentary says this: as no stream of water could flow from the temple, pass across Jordan, or reach this plain, the valley of Shittim must be considered symbolical as the valley of Jehoshaphat. But as Shittim may signify thorns, it may figuratively represent the most uncultivated and ferocious inhabitants of the earth receiving the gospel of Christ and being civilized and saved by it. We know that briars and thorns are emblems of bad men. Thus, all the figures in this verse will point out the happy times of the gospel and the kingdom. It is absolutely beautiful what God is going to do. I'd like you finally to turn to the end of the Bible, brethren, Revelation 21, and we'll close it here. This is my last point. Point number 10 is that ultimately there will be no more curse. Ultimately, there will be no more curse because of he who bore the curse in our place. Ultimately, there's no more curse. Revelation 21, we've been here, and it's a wonderful passage, verses 3 and 4. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Revelation 21, 3 through 4, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death. The penalty is gone. There will be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain. Notice it, brethren, that's all the penalty of sin listed there. Not just death, sorrow, crying, pain, none of it. It is all gone, for the former things have passed away. For the former things have passed away. And look at chapter 22, verses 1 through 3. Chapter 22, verses 1 through 3. And he showed me a pure river of water of life. And again, we saw that picture of the water coming out from the temple. Clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. And verse 2, in the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life. That is not a thorny tree, brethren. That is a tree of blessing, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. This is a tree for healing, not for curse. And there will be no more curse, it says. There will be no more curse. But the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. So there you have it, brethren. From one end of history to the other, a curse imposed at one end, no curse at the other, and one who bore the curse in between. Man sinned and was cut off from the tree of life and subjected to a curse of thorns, meant literally but also symbolizing all of the suffering that results from sin. The nation of Israel likewise sinned and received the curse represented by thorns, particularly on itself. But in the end, the curse will be alleviated, both literal thorns and briars, and in an ultimate sense, all suffering. The millennium will be a time when the whole of creation is changed. No more predation, no more thorns, no more evil people, no more hurting and destroying, no more diseases and disabilities. And ultimately, when all of humanity who are willing to become part of the family of God, there will be no more death, no more sorrow, no more crying, and no more pain. Why? Because of rejecting the wrong way of life and receiving forgiveness through the sacrifice of one who took our place. He, the very one who imposed the curse, came as the representative of all mankind and of the nation of Israel. And in his immense sacrifice, he took on himself the penalty of sin. Not just death, but also suffering and unimaginable suffering. And in doing so, he bore upon his head, piercing into him the principal symbol of the curse, thorns, as he hung on the tree accursed. He bore the pain so that ultimately we won't have to. By his stripes, the cuts into his flesh, brethren, we are healed. Through him, we have freedom. The crown of thorns, brethren, was no mere coincidence, nor was the scourging and piercing of Christ's side. It was part of a carefully planned story. The awesome story of our redemption through our Redeemer, and we are meant to learn from it and to stand in awe. As we ponder the meaning of this awesome feast, let's remember and reflect on just what Christ went through to bring this great plan to fruition and the staggering opportunity that is provided to us, that with his help we may walk the pathway to life in a new heavens and a new earth with no suffering, a world of peace and joy without end. To God be the glory.